You're listening to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year, presented by Gay City News and GayCityNews.com. I'm your host, Paul Schindler. Welcome to the 17th episode of Talk It Out. As we come down to the final 6 weeks in the election campaign, I returned to Pennsylvania to talk to an organizing group that we first met in one of our earliest episodes. I speak with Adam Barbanel-Fried, the director of Changing the Conversation Together, a group working to mobilize voters in low turnout neighborhoods in Philadelphia by making use of an intensive door-to-door voter outreach technique known as deep canvassing. A few days before speaking with Adam, I traveled to Philadelphia to spend this past Sunday canvassing with the group alongside nearly 100 other volunteers. I learned firsthand how challenging that work can be, but also about how thoroughly Changing the Conversation Together trains its volunteers to have this sort of in-depth and authentic conversation with potential voters shown to be the single most effective way to increase turnout. Mobilizing voter turnout is a vital factor in an election expected to be very close, and one in which Pennsylvania could well decide the outcome. Adam and I talk in detail about the training involved in doing deep canvassing and what a volunteer can reasonably expect to encounter. We also discuss Changing the Conversation's plans for the final six-week stretch of the campaign, and most importantly, about how you can help. On today's podcast, I welcome back Adam Barbanel-Fried, the director of Changing the Conversation Together. In these final weeks before the November election, Changing the Conversation Together continues to work hard to mobilize voters in Philadelphia neighborhoods to help defeat Donald Trump in the critical swing state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the largest of the blue wall swing states, and in fact, that state could well decide the presidential contest. In the first couple of episodes of this podcast in May and June, I spoke to both Adam and to political organizer Dave Fleischer about the organizing technique that Changing the Conversation employs that's known as deep canvassing, an approach that is shown to be the most effective tool in motivating potential voters to actually turn out to cast a ballot. Because the election is now down to the wire, I don't want to spend too much time on the theory of deep canvassing, though it's important for listeners to understand why it is such a valuable tool. Instead, I want to hear from Adam about how his group is getting its work done now and what Changing the Conversation Together will need in terms of resources and support over the next 6 weeks to maximize its impact. With all that said, welcome back to the podcast, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Adam, in order to get our conversation to the point of talking nuts and bolts, can you at first briefly explain to listeners what deep canvassing is all about?
Deep canvassing is a form of canvassing, face-to-face interactions with members of the community, potential voters and voters, where we connect with them authentically through the telling of stories and eliciting of the stories. We really try to connect with them emotionally, where we take our time to talk and listen to people about our lives and theirs, as opposed to a lot of regular, more traditional canvassing. You spend a lot of time training volunteers how to connect and how to talk so that people will listen, and how to listen so people will talk. And it's really a departure. It can feel like a departure from politics as usual. It is also the most powerful form of voter persuasion that's ever been measured.
So there's required training for deep canvassers to work with your group ahead of them actually hitting the streets to do the canvassing. Tell us what that looks like.
Because we have been focusing so heavily in the world of deep canvassing and connecting with people emotionally, the number one tool that we use is telling them personal stories to connect emotionally with voters and ultimately using both the telling and eliciting of stories as a way to build connection, to build trust, and to help people open up in such a way that we can help them realize that they are themselves people who would like to vote. So the training includes, how do you create a deep canvassing story? So we start off with a story workshop, which is usually organized and held remotely on Zoom. And we show videos of folks who've done it in the past. And we have some creative writing prompts to help people think about something that they feel really deeply. See, many people think that to get personal when canvassing about an election, that you would want to talk to someone and that it has to be tied to like Obamacare. I think people think, my father-in-law lost his job, and without Obamacare, you know, we never would be where we are. He might have died. That's not to say that that's not a very deeply felt and true story that someone might have felt. But the question I ask you to think about is, as you're approaching a stranger, not to think about what you think might persuade them, because the story itself is not actually what persuades a person to do something. The story is a way to open up with vulnerability and show that you're a person. You see, Paul, as you know, because you've been out with us, the neighborhoods that where we're door knocking and we're talking to people in the streets, these neighborhoods, they're overwhelmingly concerned about Trumpism, if you ask them. They would overwhelmingly oppose it. 96% of the people who vote in federal elections voted for Biden and Clinton before that. But there's a huge number of the folks in these neighborhoods who are at risk of not voting and don't vote. So the question we ask ourselves is, how can you persuade someone? How can you connect with that person? A lot of these folks might not have grown up in communities where people were voting as much, might not have had a great education. Perhaps they're younger, they're less well off. Perhaps they have difficult shifts at the job. They're moving around a lot. These are folks who are often living on the margins of society. And so politics just aren't on the top of their mind. And so the question we ask ourselves is, how can we do that in a way where we're not coming in and lecturing or condescending? And so we tell this story as a way to say, look, I know there are hundreds and hundreds of people who are going to knock on your door in the next 6 weeks. I'm here to say, this is who I am. This is who, you know, I'm a real person. I'm going to open up. What ends up happening is it creates a space when it works. It creates a space for mutual story sharing and trust building so that that person can then really begin to reflect on their own life. It's through that reflection that we believe, and much behavioral science has backed us up to say, folks are more likely to really reconsider the way they approach, in this case, voting. So the training is, you know, there's a story workshop. And then when you get here, we will never give people a list and send them out the door. We pride ourselves on taking the time to make sure every single person has the best training we can offer them. We spend time talking a little bit about who we're reaching out to, what are some of the challenges we run into when we're canvassing. And also we role play what a deep canvassing conversation is like. We show it where there's a volunteer getting up, pretending to do it. And then we give you an opportunity before you knock on the first door. Because each one of these conversations is so important. You know, we have hundreds of conversations every canvassing weekend. And in 2020, of the 11,000 plus, you know, conversations we had, the folks who were truly deep canvassed, 87% of them voted, as compared to 70% of their neighbors. So I really want, if you're going to come out and volunteer, you're going to spend the whole day with us, I think that time that you as a volunteer offer to this campaign is gold. And we want to, in turn, equip you with the best that we can offer.
For the benefit of our listeners, I just wanted to reflect for a moment on my experience with that training. The initial training was the Thursday evening before my Sunday day of canvassing. It was a training session on Zoom that lasted, I believe it was about an hour and 45 minutes. Hearing that it was on Zoom, I had concerns that it might be somewhat impersonal and not all that interactive. And to my delight, what ended up happening after about 20 to 30 minute introductory session was that we broke out into very small pods. And my pod had three of us who were newcomers to canvassing, and then a coach. And that coach worked with us for, I believe, a little over an hour in terms of developing our stories. And those stories were short, about 2 minutes, but I was encouraged to make my story specific and to be very personal. The aim was that when I vote in part because of the things that are important to me in my personal life. And the story I developed was about some early impressions I had of my husband when I met him more than 40 years ago. That was very, very helpful. And it was a whole lot less impersonal. In fact, there was nothing impersonal about the training that evening than I might have anticipated hearing that it was going to be on Zoom. And then those lessons from Thursday evening were reinforced live Sunday morning in about an hour and a half training regimen that we went through face to face. Again, much of that with a specific coach. There was some general conversation with the overall group, but then we were broken down again into pods with specific people. And I think it's important for people who are going to come to do your training to understand that they're going to get that very tailored and specific assistance. Yeah. Now, I was in Philly on Sunday, as we've mentioned, with your team. We were in a West Philadelphia neighborhood. It was working class, largely African-American, and it was described as a neighborhood with a low propensity to vote in past elections. Has changing the conversation together been working exclusively this year in neighborhoods with traditionally low voter turnout?
That's right. That's what, since we started working in Philadelphia in 2020, in fact, before even in 2019, when we started working in Pennsylvania, we've been looking and reaching out to people who are less likely to vote. Since 22, we've been in West Philadelphia in neighborhoods where there certainly are people who do vote, but that, you know, the super voters, the people who are voting regularly, that's, I don't know the exact number. If it's over 30%, I'd be impressed.
So you mentioned the statistic about the folks you engaged with in 2020 in deep canvassing, voting at an 87% level versus 70% overall for the neighborhood you were working in. Your website, which by the way, is CTC4Progress, that's CTC, the numeral 4progress.org. You also measured how much you increased turnout compared to whether the voters you were doing outreach to had voted in each of the last three elections, in two of the last three, in just one of the last three, and who had not voted in recent elections. What did those statistics look like? That was also, I think, an impressive measure.
Oh, yeah. It's quite remarkable. You know, just to be clear, not everybody knows this, Paul, but after each election, obviously, the ballot is a secret ballot. No one will ever know who you voted for. But the fact that you do vote is public information. So we keep very detailed notes on all of the people who we speak to. And when the information on who actually voted in which elections become public, it's usually in the spring after any given general election, we take a look at the people who we tried to reach and the people we did reach to see what kind of an impact, if any, we made. And in 2020, what we found was we were able to also break people down by people who voted based on their voting history. So, you know, we in that year were considering somebody a super voter if they had voted in three out of the last three federal elections, right? So in 2020, we're thinking about 2018, 2016, and 2014. And a super voter is somebody who voted in three out of the last three. But we were really trying to target people who voted in two out of three, one out of three, and zero out of three. Zero out of three, meaning they hadn't voted in any of the three prior federal elections. After the election, looking at the 11,000 people, we spoke to over 11,000 people. I should be clear, we ended up only being able to find about 10,000 people in the van. So I'm extrapolating from that. But 10,000 people we were able to find information on. And what we found was that the less voting history person had, the greater our impact. And this is controlled for eligibility. Like, in other words, it was everyone who was 18 at the time of the year in question. But people who had voted, this thing actually surprised me. even super voters voted at a rate higher than other super voters. People who voted in 3 out of 3 prior elections that we spoke to were 6% more likely to vote after a conversation with one of our canvassers. But 2 out of 3 was 16%. 1 out of 3 was 25%. But the number that really blew me away was that the people who had no history of voting, even though they were eligible at the time, were 29% more likely to vote. Nearly 30% more likely to, people who did not vote but could vote were nearly 30% more likely to vote after a conversation with one of our people in one of the most important cities and one of the most important states that year and this year especially. And to me, this is a sleeping giant of American democracy, Paul, because there is a world of people who you will go out and talk to them and they say, you know, politicians come, campaigns come every 2 years, every 4 years, and then they forget and they don't care. Why should I vote? What difference does it make in my life? Sometimes you'll run into that. And you know what I find? Some people are really so burnt by, you know, life can be hard. And some of the folks in the neighborhoods who we're talking to have had hard lives. I am sometimes meeting people who are formerly incarcerated. I'm sometimes meeting people who have had family members who are victims of gun violence. You know, the school that their kids went to might be terrible. And I recently ran into a woman who was struggling to avoid homelessness and was moving in with some friends because she couldn't afford her rent anymore. And so you can understand why someone might be cynical about politics. And yet the power of just listening to someone and saying and like acknowledging their pain and their struggle, where you're not promising all the, you know, you, I'm never going to make a promise I can't keep. I can't promise you that if Kamala Harris gets elected, all of your problems will be solved, obviously, right? But I can acknowledge that the story you're telling me is a real story, and I can relate to the pain. You know, you get a lot of credibility in a relationship with anyone, but even perhaps especially with a stranger, if you're just willing to listen. It's the power of listening. That's what I would say.
So you've just given us some statistics, Adam, on your ability to increase the likelihood of someone voting. And for folks who generally do not vote, your success was almost increasing that chance by a third. I think it's important in that context to step back and point out that Pennsylvania is the fifth largest state in the country. It has almost 13 million people. Joe Biden won that state in 2020 by 81,000 votes. Hillary Clinton lost Pennsylvania in 2016 by only 44,000 votes. So we're talking about, given the size of that state, we're talking about a very small number of people deciding the election in Pennsylvania. Right. And Philadelphia and the greater Philadelphia area is by far the largest population and voting center in the state of Pennsylvania. So the impact of your work there is highly significant given the results we've seen in the previous two presidential elections.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the neighborhoods we're canvassing in could actually make the difference. If we were able to canvass in all of the wards, like the ones we're canvassing in, the people who didn't vote in 2020 in these wards that vote Democratic 96% and up, there are over 150,000 registered voters who didn't show up in 2020. That's more than the margin of difference in 2016 and 2020 combined. So yes, this is why we have continued this year after year. And, you know, we run into people sometimes a few years later who remember us and appreciate the conversation and remember the conversation about someone who was close to them, who they love. It's really, I'll tell you, Paul, it is also just wonderful to be in person with a universe of canvassers who are leading with love and leading with their own personal story. You don't have to be an expert on policy. You don't have to be an expert on, you know, what Kamala Harris would do for, you know, on this issue or that. You just need to be an expert on yourself. You know, you just need to be able to be willing to sort of put yourself into this conversation And then you, what we end up having is a community of people who, no matter how scary or concerned we get, it is so wonderful to be in a universe of people who are working together. I'm just going to give you a little anecdote, which is we were canvassing the Sunday after Biden had his terrible debate performance. That morning, ooh, looking at people, you didn't even want to ask, how are you today? Remember that moment? It was pretty scary. And at the end of the day, one of my canvassing volunteers and friends said, you know, I went from the depths of despair to feeling like I was in a community doing something meaningful. There's so much where we think politics is, we're reading the polls and the horse race and donating and writing, you know, maybe writing a postcard if you're doing something. But there's something about coming to town, doing the training, going out there and talking to people who their decision to vote is really what's going to make the difference. And let's be clear, Paul, I'm not a resident of Philadelphia. I've moved here for the remainder of the campaign, but neither of us are, right? Our votes almost don't matter. The folks who we're talking to, their votes really matter. And it's so rewarding to be part of something, talking to people day in and day out.
So Sunday morning, I arrived at a church basement in West Philadelphia, and I got there early because of the train I took. There was a huge church basement room, which is like so many church basement rooms people may have encountered in their lives. It was full of chairs. And then there was a side room, a little smaller, but also filled with chairs. And as the room filled up, I was really struck by the number of people who were there to do the work that I was there to do. What was the count of people who participated Saturday and then participated on Sunday?
You know, I don't have the exact number at my fingertips, but what I can tell you is that we had, between the 2 days, were 200 canvassing shifts. I believe we had about 115 on Saturday and something like 90 people on Sunday. Yeah.
The other thing that struck me, and I mentioned that when we sat down for some additional in-person training Sunday morning before we hit the streets, there were coaches all around the room to help us. I was sent out to canvas opposite sides of blocks with someone who had a fair amount of experience with canvassing and was able to kind of coach me through the process as we moved down the streets. How are you able to draw on so many experienced hands in putting together any given day's canvas?
Well, it's not easy. A lot of us are working really hard, but what I'll say is a couple things. First of all, we canvass year round, and sometimes that's important because you can just talk to that many more people. Deep canvassing does take longer than your average canvas. A good deep canvasser should have, you know, be able to get at least four conversations, which are 10 to 15 minutes long in a shift. That's very different than traditional canvassing. But the other thing that's advantageous about canvassing year round is you can iterate. And you can see people who are getting really good at deep canvassing and enjoying the training and enjoying it themselves and inviting them to help then by training others. See, there's deep canvassing, which we train you as a volunteer to come and do, which is just like, what are we doing at the door with a particular voter? But the thing that we don't necessarily always talk about is we are entirely based on the energy and support of our supporters. And that, I mean, some of that support is of course financial because we do have a growing staff every year, but there's also people who are volunteering so much, you know, 15 to 20 hours a week easily in a canvassing week. And that doesn't even come speak to anything with regards to the people who are in the leadership of those teams who are volunteering even more. And so I think that the thing that we really picked up from the early deep canvassing pioneers and our partners and the LA LGBT Leadership Lab, who really, you know, did the initial deep canvassing projects, and Dave Fleischer, who you mentioned, and his team, was really prioritizing welcoming, supporting, and inviting in volunteers to be part of the leadership and training. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what comes to mind when you ask it.
Well, I was just struck by how many human resources there were to tap when I was there, whether it was the coach before I went out, whether it was the guy that I drove around to a specific set of streets, or anyone else in the room that seemed to know what they were talking about. And when I asked a question, in fact, knew what they were talking about. If I were to summarize the key elements that I took away from what I was supposed to be doing as a deep canvasser, I would mention three major things and then two additional things. First of all, that I share a personal story about a person I love in order to forge an authentic connection with a potential voter and then elicit a similar story from that voter. That was number one. Number two, that I get an estimate from the potential voter themselves of how likely it is they believe that they will vote. And then third, that I get a phone number from that person so that changing the conversation together can follow up over time with that voter to maximize the chance that the voter actually casts a ballot. Now, two additional elements there are, first of all, to make sure that they're registered, which is obviously key, and to find out whether there are other folks in their household or family that still need to register. And then also whether they would like to take advantage of the opportunity to get a vote by mail ballot, which encourages folks to get the voting process out of the way early. You can bank the votes and you don't have to worry about that voter showing up on a rainy or chilly November day to vote. Is that a fair description to help our listeners understand what they would be up to if they were deep canvassing with you?
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Okay, so my experience, I had five conversations on Sunday. And first of all, there were many homes where there was no response to my knock on the door. And there was no case in which I had any suspicion that folks were in the house and simply not answering the door. It wasn't like I heard noise in the background or anything. Folks may have been away. Among the five folks that I spoke to, two of them, I succeeded really in getting all three of those elements I mentioned. We shared personal stories. I got an estimate from those folks as to whether they were going to vote. And in both of those cases, it was 100% certainty. And I got a phone number so that you folks can follow up. In another two of those conversations, we exchanged stories and I got the estimate on whether or not they would be voting. Again, it was certainty that they would be voting, but I did not get a phone number from those folks. And then in one case, and it was a case of a guy who was in a home in which he and his wife had just gotten married the day before, and there were people moving things in and out, and he honestly, despite some persistence on my part, did not have time to talk to me. Literally, while we were talking, people were moving some suitcases and so forth out of the house. But he was absolutely certain he was going to vote. He pointed out that the polling place was right around the corner, that there was absolutely no chance that he wasn't going to vote for Kamala Harris on November 5th. I mentioned that to emphasize that the effort is very labor intensive. Now, I was a newcomer, and I am going to return to Philadelphia to do some more canvassing with you. Hopefully, I'll have greater success in being able to persist in the conversations I have to achieve all three of those goals that your organization has. And I might also be there on a day when I have better luck at finding people at home. How does the experience I just described compare to what a typical newcomer's outcome is?
You know, it occurs to me as you were retelling your story, I forgot one important element that I'm not sure you did capture, which is I always, at the beginning and end, try to tap into the incredible urgency of this election, because it just gives me license to start my story, to ask the questions, and to explain why I want their phone number. And that can't be lost. And it can't be lost, and I don't want to overemphasize it, but I just want to say it because I will say there's a period of my time, my life, where I was I've been organizing for 20 plus years. And if I had heard these stories about someone I love, you know, and in an election of this urgency, I would have thought, who are you touchy-feely people? Like, are we like going to Woodstock and dancing with flowers or something? Like, this is really important. And I really want people to know that I really care about the outcome of this election. To answer your question more directly, though, Paul, I don't know what the average newcomer's experience is like. I might even say there are some people, there might be some people who do better than you do. You, of course, to say you're a newcomer probably wouldn't be even really fair if we were doing a real measurement, because you've spent a lot of time thinking about this and talking to me and Dave and reading about it. And right, you knew about it before you were even talking to us. So you came in with a fair degree of knowledge for a quote unquote newcomer, right? It's hard. It's not always easy for everyone. There's some people who do great. And then there's some people who, you know, you're better at this. But, you know, there's some people for whom figuring out how to tell the story can take a couple of trips out in the field. And there's some people who are great at telling a story and then have trouble eliciting a story, right? That's the part that I think more people really need more work on when people do struggle. I will say, in terms of like getting a stranger to open up, some of the people who do that for their life work can, you know, come in and it's easier for them. Journalists, nurses, teachers, you know, sometimes therapists are, you know, there's a world of people, and actors, by the way. Good actors are not just people who talk, but they also listen, you know, to their audience and can connect. And so there's a whole world of people who actually take to this very well. So there's a wide range of experience. And some people, like anything you're learning, you'll only, I think, only get better every time you go out. So I would think that, you know, the next time you come out, some of the things that were a little rusty the first time will get a little easier. And all the more so as you move forward, you'll find out new tricks for yourself that make sense for yourself. I don't know if this is answering your question, but I guess the one thing I'll say is the reason we spend so much time training and debriefing and supporting our volunteers, and the reason we spend so much time canvassing year round, is because it does take time to, for most of us, to get good at something. But democracy's worth it.
I have a good friend from the city here who has been down a couple of times to work with you folks, and she's coming down for three additional weekends before the election. She said that after the first time she was with you, she went to a storytelling workshop that helped her refine her story and think about it more. How does that work? What does that look like?
Yeah, we do really strongly encourage people to participate in three cycles of story workshops before coming down. And as you get more advanced, we begin to have trainings for more advanced canvassers where, depending on the need of the group, we focus on different things. Often the thing we really try to encourage people to focus on when they're starting off is really on their own story. I cannot emphasize enough that the ability to tell your story well and be comfortable telling your story, comfortable meaning not necessarily like you have to be smooth, like you'd be on the Moth Radio Hour or something, right? Like a performance. Like I have no concern if you are nervous, the person you're talking to has been nervous. You know, they will be, I think, more likely to be sympathetic to you if you're actually a little nervous. In fact, they'll be less likely to be sympathetic to you if you're super smooth. But really being comfortable, at least in your gut and in your heart, with a story that you're ready to tell. I think that is so important. Then as you get more advanced and you have more experience under your belt, the thing we work with people on is, okay, now you can tell a story. Have you been able to get people to open up and tell you a story? Can you elicit a story? And can you tie the two together? Because that's the art of the work.
So, and what are the canvassing dates that CTC has firmly scheduled between now and November 5?
As you will see on our website, we are canvassing every weekend day in October. Of course, the weekend for November 5th, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We are also looking for folks who can volunteer on logistics to support weekday canvassing and more than one shift of canvassing. And yeah, so we're canvassing every weekend in October, Saturday, Sunday, and in November. I mean, the first weekend of November.
On Sunday, you mentioned that the key constraint in terms of scheduling some weekday canvassing, that would be late afternoon canvassing, I think you mentioned 3 o'clock to 6 p.m., was to ensure that you've got the coaches / experienced canvassers in place on those days so that they can help newcomers or people that have not canvassed a great deal. Is that correct?
That's right. The biggest thing holding us back from putting up more dates on our website right now is not whether or not we would have enough canvassers to make it worth it, but actually if we had enough people who are willing to support those canvassers as they go out into the field. So one of the things we're looking for is some of our more experienced canvassers to volunteer as weekday canvassing captains. We're also looking for people who can volunteer as drivers or help with logistics or data entry and other jobs that are behind the scenes. Because, you know, as a small example, you know, voting has started in Pennsylvania. We have everything is under the vote by mail law before election day here, but it's basically early voting. If you go to an election satellite office today, you can go and register to vote by mail and they will give you your mail ballot and you can fill it out right there and then. And they will help make sure you filled it out correctly before you put it into the drop box right outside. So if I'm canvassing someone today and they want to vote, I would personally take them in a car, offer to drive them to the satellite office right away. And so we're looking for people who can drive voters, who can drive volunteers. We're looking for folks who can, you know, schlep boxes, hand out papers, sign people in, enter in data. Yeah, I don't know if that answers all your questions, but yeah.
So in addition to the 10 weekend dates between now and November 5 that are currently on the schedule, folks might at some point down the road also find some weekdays in which there would be canvassing opportunities, and that's a to come.
I anticipate that we will probably be canvassing every day in Monday to Thursday, at least for the last 2 weeks, you know, starting, say, the 22nd. The question we're asking ourselves is, can we canvass the week of the 14th? Because the 21st is actually voter registration deadline, so there's a real advantage to getting out there every day beforehand.
So based on everything you're seeing in terms of the volunteer turnout you're getting, what you're hearing from voters in the Philadelphia neighborhoods you've been working in, what's your assessment of how the effort to defeat Donald Trump in Pennsylvania is going?
You know, I'd be interested in your thought, Paul. We spoke briefly at the end of the day on Sunday, but I want to say, just to be clear, I feel, you know, I have very close to the ground sense of what's going on, but I also am very biased. My bias is it's so wonderful to be in this universe of people who are working so hard and are just this great collective of human effort to stand for what's right. And so every time I read these terrible things, you know, the second debate, by the way, was really hard for me in a different way, because I don't actually spend a lot of time listening to Donald Trump speak, and I could barely stomach it. You know, it's just an aside. It was so upsetting. I'm a very political person. I'm a political organizer for 24 years. And I was just, it's gotten worse, you know? And so it was a rude awakening, even though I'm not some naive person who just, I don't know, doing something else. But long story short, I think that there are absolutely reasons to be optimistic. But even though, you know, I'm sitting here today and I saw another poll that shows Harris is up by a few points in Pennsylvania, but both of those polls that are similarly like that, the last two ones that I saw, the difference is within the margin of error, which means, of course, that it's all about the margin of effort. We cannot take this election for granted. there are too many things that can go wrong. I mean, you and I, Paul, and I bet a lot of your listeners, we have been around the block long enough to know how quickly things can change with just some stupid freaking headline, or if war breaks out even more explosively in the Middle East, God forbid. You know, there's just so much that could happen. We cannot take any vote for granted. I have hope for humanity, and I'm working my tail off. And I hope you will join us again.
Well, in terms of my reaction, and this is reaction simply from Sunday, it's two things. First of all, the neighborhood you're working in, the neighborhood I was working in on Sunday, if it's a low voter turnout neighborhood, it is certainly not a neighborhood friendly to Donald Trump. There was not a single person that I encountered who did not have an immediate and strong visceral reaction against Donald Trump. Even the one person who I met who seemed the least enthusiastic about Kamala Harris and also, I think, the least likely to vote was very negative on Donald Trump. The other thing I'll say is that when you asked for where folks had come to in a big room that I was sitting in on Sunday morning, you first of all asked who was from Philly. It was a very large contingent there. Then you said New York City, and there were a lot of us from New York City. Then you asked for D.C., Maryland, and there, to my surprise, were a lot of people from D.C. and Maryland. And then there was a big squawk, and the squawk came from the people from New Jersey who you had failed to recognize. So there are people from, you know, the Northeast corridor that are heading to Philadelphia to join your effort. And that was pretty remarkable to see those numbers. Again, I just want to mention your website, because that's the place where people have to go if they want to plug themselves in. It's ctcforprogress.org. That's CTC, the numeral four, the word progress.org. Adam Barbanel-Fried, Director of Changing the Conversation Together, thanks so much for joining the podcast again today, and good luck to you.
Paul, thank you so much. Take good care.
Thanks again to Adam Barbanel-Fried, the Director of Changing the Conversation Together. And thanks to all of you for listening again this week. For more information about Changing the Conversation Together, and to see how you can pitch in on their canvassing and voter mobilization efforts between now and November 5th, visit CTC for Progress. That's CTC, the numeral four, and the word progress.org. Please tune in to the next episode of Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe now on Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms.